It's not in their interest that this war stops, because then America's attention will turn to China, and it's not in their interest. It is interesting, you know, why he said that. Later on, I spoke to some think tankers from Japan whose assessment was that actually the war in Ukraine is not very popular in China. So they need to also explain this to the people, why they are the key enablers of this war. So to make this softer and say, see, this is in our interest.
Можливо, з трьох пострілів. Вони, ви знаєте, що, в принципі, не секрет. Так, ось Росія?
Ну, до речі, до цього ми жодного разу це не озвучували, але коротко лаконічно можемо сказати, що так. Один з трьох рішників був успішно знищений.
На їх території.
На їх території, на Капустиному Яру, силами ГУР, СБУ і СЗР. Ну, це вже ми не будемо...
Це важливо. Особливо, він не
знищений. Але це була дуже успішна...
І тому ситуація в Покровській, вона складна. Вона там, ну, дивіться, всі їх сили. Там, ви знаєте, що в цьому напрямку 170 тисяч зосередження ворога. Дуже багато. Прям дуже. І на ранок я розмовляв з Лавкумом, змін в Покровському немає. Покровську є русські. Наші їх знищують потрохи, да? Тому що, ну, треба берегти також особовий склад. Просто бігти там, а вони звідкись з цієї чи іншої будівлі, вони там ховаються.
This is my video update on this Friday afternoon, October the 31st, coming to you from Hagia Napa, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news, and let's start things off with Prince Andrew, who has been stripped of his title and evicted from his palace or his estate or whatever you call it. Anyway, his brother, the king, his family, they have disowned Andrew, and they have vanquished Prince Andrew for his ties to Epstein. And now Andrew will be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. He's no longer Prince Andrew. He is Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. Piers Morgan, who follows the royals very closely, posted on X, "This is one of the most extraordinary statements ever released by the palace. The king has basically turned his brother into a non-royal." And Piers Morgan included the statement from Buckingham Palace, which reads, "His Majesty has today initiated a formal process to remove the style titles and honor of Prince Andrew. Prince Andrew will now be known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. His lease on the Royal Lodge has to date provided him with legal protection to continue in residence. Formal notice has now been served to surrender the lease, and he will move to alternative private accommodations. These censures are deemed necessary, notwithstanding the fact that he continues to deny the allegations against him. Their Majesties wish to make clear that their thoughts and utmost sympathies have been and will remain with the victims and the survivors of any and all forms of abuse." That is the statement from Buckingham Palace. So they're washing their hands of Prince Andrew. Well, no longer Prince Andrew. Andrew Mountbatten of Windsor, whatever it is. Mountbatten Windsor Andrew. That's what he's going to be known as going forward. He got off easy, man. And the royals got off easy from all this Epstein stuff. If this is where it ends, then they all got off easy. But I don't think this is where it ends, if you want my opinion. Anyway, big news coming out of the UK. And The Economist, which is, I believe, a UK publication, right? The big neocon UK publication. They are posting an article. They posted an article which claims that Ukraine needs $400 billion over the next 4 years in order to survive. Why on the 25th? Isn't Halloween today? Is Halloween today or was it yesterday? I don't know. But anyway, the Castle Club here in Limassol had a big party, a Halloween masquerade, a closing party, because it's a closing party because the tourist season is ending, right? So it was on the 25th of October. And I missed it. I missed the big Halloween party at Castle Club. Oh, well, life goes on. So, $400 billion, man, over the next 4 years. And The Economist is saying that that the EU is on the hook for this $400 billion over the next 4 years. It says that Ukraine needs $50 billion every year just to stay afloat, just for its economy. To stay afloat. And it needs a total of 400 big ones, man. And so The Economist is saying that NATO's existence is in jeopardy. The cohesion and solidarity of NATO is at stake if Ukraine does not get this money. And so what The Economist is suggesting is that that the $140 billion needs to be taken from the Russian frozen assets. This reparation loan that that Ursula has cooked up needs to be dished out to Zelensky in order for Ukraine to survive. That is what The Economist is saying. In order for NATO to survive. And you know what country might actually step up to guarantee the loan? Norway. Yeah, Norway might actually step up and guarantee the $140 billion because Belgium is saying, look, if this money is taken from Euroclear, that would mean that Euroclear might sink, the Belgium economy might sink, and we don't want to be on our own fighting the Russian lawsuits. So we want all of the EU member states to join in and to share the risk and to guarantee this money. And the EU member states are saying, nah, we prefer if Belgium just takes the risk. And so Norway might be stepping up with their big energy and oil money, the big oil fund that they have. And they might guarantee the $140 billion in Ursula's reparation loans scheme. Good on you, Norway. Good on you. Stepping up to guarantee the theft, the seizing, sorry, not the theft, the seizing of the Russian assets to go to the black hole that is known as Project Ukraine. Good job, Norway. All the political parties in Norway seem to be aligned on this. They're all in support of Norway, perhaps guaranteeing the reparations loan. So that's some interesting news. And all of this is going to be discussed, according to El Mundo, at a secret coalition of the willing meeting, which will be taking place on November 4th in Madrid. So it's a secret meeting. So don't say anything, everybody. According to El Mundo, we have a secret coalition of the willing meeting. Someone has decided to build some rock formations here in Ayia Napa. Aliens, perhaps? Maybe aliens? Decided to build these rock formations. Very interesting. Let's take a closer look at what's going on here. So yeah, a secret meeting, guys. The House of Molibu, M-O-L-I-B-U. Wow, this is pretty well done, man, right? Not bad. People did this and they did a good job, man. Got windows, got a door, got an energy drink or a Starbucks. What is that, a Starbucks? Starbucks espresso drink? What more do you need? Very well done. Let's go check out the other residences here in Ayanapa. So, a secret meeting to discuss the reparations loan and Project Ukraine. Very, very secret, according to El Mundo. Very, very secret. So I didn't talk about this yesterday, but the EU, they are putting together a 12-point peace plan, or they're publishing the details of a 12-point peace plan that they're putting together. Okay, so, well, there's a Durex right there. Okay. What's been going on at this establishment? So yeah, they put together this peace plan. I talked about this a week ago, but they published some more information on it, some more bullet points as to what this Ukraine peace plan is all about that Europe is putting together. From what I understand, the final plan will be just one piece of paper. That's what Zelensky's entertainment lawyer, Yermak, said. It'll be a one-page document. And I think it's 12 points, too. The 12 points or 15 points or 115 points. Who knows? Who cares? No one's really paying attention to this, to be quite honest. And this was in the news 2 days ago. I don't think anyone paid any attention to it. I mean, we had a huge day of news yesterday. And no one's really talking about this plan or even taking it seriously, to be quite honest. And there's nothing in this plan that will lead to any kind of a negotiated peace in Ukraine. It's just more of the same, to be quite honest. The only thing different in this plan is that the Europeans are now kissing up to Trump a whole lot more. Like these plans that they're coming up with now, a lot of them are based on Trump's 20-point Gaza ceasefire plan. So they're basing a lot of these plans on that 20-point ceasefire plan by putting in provisions which state that there's going to be some sort of a peace board of directors, and the United States will chair this board of directors, and Trump will oversee everything. Basically, what they had in the Gaza 20-point peace plan with the board of peace, with Trump and Tony Blair and all of these guys on the board of peace, which is crumbling. The peace plan is crumbling in Gaza, and so the EU has adopted some of those terms into the peace plan that they're now days away from announcing. Their peace plan also has some sort of a board of peace, with the United States as the chairman of the board and Trump overseeing everything. Very original from the European Union. They're just trying to kiss up to Trump, right? That's what it's all about, trying to kiss up to DJT. And they have also put out, the EU, a military mobility plan. So what's this about? This is done with NATO, in conjunction with NATO. And what this plan is about is making it easy to move weapons across the EU, making it quick and easy to move all of these weapons, soldiers, vehicles and stuff like that, tanks, across the EU member states in case there is some sort of a conflict with Russia, or some sort of an EU invasion of Russia or something like that. So yeah, they posted this map, this diagram of the EU military mobility plan, which is being developed with NATO. And it says rapid deployment of heavy armor access across Europe. Rapid deployment of heavy armor across Europe. That's what it says. But, you know, you look at this this map, this image, and the heavy armor is moving in the wrong direction, man. It's moving towards Spain and Portugal. And even this plane, this bomber or whatever it is moving towards Spain and Portugal. Why is it moving towards Spain and Portugal? Russia's that way. It's not that way. What is this really about, EU and NATO? Are you guys going to make a move on Spain and Portugal? Hey, everyone watching from Spain and Portugal, watch out, man. Ursula's a-coming. Ursula and Mark Rutte, they're coming. Look at all those tanks heading your way. Oh, man, ridiculous. We're getting reports that that the U.S. has now notified Bulgaria, Hungary, and Slovakia that they will be decreasing troop presence in these countries along the same lines as Romania. A small decrease of U.S. troops in these countries, like what happened in Romania a couple of days ago, where they are decreasing U.S. troop presence by 700 or 900. And they're going to do the same thing in Slovakia, Hungary, and Bulgaria. And, of course, NATO and the EU, they are freaking out. They're very panicky at these statements from the Pentagon. They're starting to worry that the United States is disengaging from Europe. Slowly, slowly disengaging from NATO and from the EU. But the Pentagon is saying not to worry. They're saying that Europe, NATO and Europe, they can start taking care of their own business, and the United States will still keep a very strong and large presence in Poland and in the Baltics. But in other parts of Eastern Europe, mostly, the U.S. is going to start to decrease their troop presence. So this is causing quite a bit of panic in Brussels. On a side note, the EU is going after Slovakia, and they are trying to strip Slovakia of its voting rights. They may be moving to impose Article 7. Spearheading this is the Netherlands, and the reason they're doing this, the reason they're tinkering with stripping Slovakia of its voting rights, its Article 7 rights, is because Slovakia, last week, they officially recognize only two genders. I believe that passed the parliament, right? And they're only going to recognize two genders, and this has pissed off the EU. It's pissed off the Netherlands, and now they want to strip Slovakia of its Article 7 rights. So that's just on a side note. In the UK, they are starting to inform their public that Ukraine is going to lose the conflict. That's right. That is what the UK media is starting to do for 4 years. They've been talking up Project Ukraine and Ukraine's eventual victory and Russia's eventual collapse and how Zelensky is the next Churchill. No, he is. He is Churchill. He's Churchill number two. And that was 4 years of the UK media. And now we have a type of narrative shift where the UK media is now informing their public that, you know what, Ukraine is going down, man. Ukraine is going down. What can we say? What can we say as the UK media? Ukraine is losing. Yeah, these are the articles that are coming out of the Sunday Times that are, well, we actually have an article from The Atlantic as well. The Economist with their 400 billion, Ukraine needs 400 billion. I thought it was the Russian economy that was collapsing. And now you're saying that Ukraine needs $400 billion? That's a lot of money. But the Sunday Times is saying that Ukraine's not even going to make it to 2026. I hate to say it, but Kiev won't last till spring. For all the EU's rousing words, there just isn't the money or the will to keep defending Ukraine. That's from the UK Times. And for 4 years, they were telling us that Russia was collapsing, shovels and washing machine chips, and Putin with his 45 heart attacks, or was it Shoigu that had the 45 heart attacks? I forgot. Maybe both of them were having multiple strokes and heart attacks. Now, all of a sudden, Ukraine needs $400 billion, and it's not going to last until spring. So that's coming out of the UK media. The Atlantic Council, the think tank, the Atlantic Council, they posted an article with the title, Russia's Advance on Pokrovsk Exposes Ukraine's Growing Manpower Crisis. In this article, the Atlantic Council admits that Russia has an 8-to-1 troop advantage in Donbas, in the Pokrovsk region, an 8-to-1 advantage. They talk about how Ukraine's mobilization efforts failed. They talk about how over the past 2 months, 100,000 young Ukrainians, 18 to 22 years old, have fled Ukraine. And the Ukraine military is melting away, or is beginning to melt away. That's a better way to describe the Atlantic Council's article. And so what's the remedy, according to the Atlantic Council, is that Ukraine needs to start mobilizing everybody, including the students and the 18-year-olds, everyone. They've got to start mobilizing every single buddy in Ukraine because they're not going to make it. There's a huge shortage in the military on the front lines. And Zelensky, just 6 months ago, Zelensky was telling us that Russia had lost around 1 million troops and Ukraine's losses were at 45,000. Remember that statement from Zelensky? And Trump. And Trump says the same, right? Trump also says the same about Ukraine's losses and Russia's losses. And they were leading everybody to believe that that Ukraine actually has the military, the troop advantage. And now you have the Atlantic Council saying, you know what, it's more like 8-to-1 Russia. So that's the article there. Kiev is telling journalists not to go into Pokrovsk. I talked about this yesterday, Putin's offer. It wasn't for 24 hours. It's an offer for about 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours, where the Russian military would stop their operations, contingent on the Ukraine troops that are trapped to also pause their operations. And Putin said, if this is agreed on, then we will allow journalists from everywhere, Ukraine, Russian, Western, international journalists, whatever, they're welcome to come and see that Pokrovsk and Kupiansk are indeed encircled and the Ukraine troops are indeed trapped. That was Putin's offer. And the Ukraine foreign ministry came out with a statement and they told Ukrainian journalists, don't you dare. Don't you dare go to Pokrovsk. If you go to Pokrovsk, we're watching you. That's what the statement said. We're watching very closely. And if you go to Pokrovsk, if you take Putin up on this offer, then you can face serious consequences. Legal consequences is basically what the foreign ministry warned. So that's that story. It reveals that the troops are trapped in there, right? That's what this reveals. Because you're getting a lot of panic from the Ukraine side of things, threatening their journalists. Don't you dare go into these regions. Moscow says Kiev trying to hide catastrophe of encircled troops. Ukraine is lying to its people and the world about its military setbacks, the Russian Defense Ministry has said. Yeah, when the Russian Defense Ministry puts out a statement like that, then you can take it to the bank, man. because the MOD of Russia is super conservative, very, very conservative. Well, here's another rock formation that we missed. There's some other rock formations down there, but there are people sunbathing, so I don't want to disturb them with my camera. This one's an interesting one. I don't know what this is. Man, very well built. Well done. Aliens, the aliens that have landed in Ayia Napa. Very creative. Okay. So let's move on and talk about the APEC summit. Canada is meeting with China. Carney is meeting with Xi, or he met with Xi. And this is the first time they've met, the leaders of Canada and China, I believe, in 8 years. I think so, in 8 years they haven't met. And Trudeau, man, Trudeau. He was very, very hawkish against China. Remember Huawei and arresting the CEO's daughter? Remember that incident, which happened like 5 years ago? Yeah, Trudeau was very, very hawkish, very tough. He's tough. Trudeau's tough, right? But he was very tough on China, or at least that's the way he made it out to be. But now we have the meeting at the APEC summit. I believe Canada is trying to, or will start bringing in Chinese cars, EVs, right? I think I got that correct. I think this was announced last week that Canada is going to be bringing in Chinese EVs. Probably a smart move, given that Canada is back on Trump's naughty list with tariffs, right? Probably not a bad idea to hedge a bit. But it's interesting that, 8 years since the two leaders met. The first meeting of Canadian PM with China's president in 8 years. It's interesting that Xi Jinping, he's staying for the APEC summit. He went to South Korea. For the main purpose of his trip was to attend the APEC summit. Trump left before the summit even began. Yeah, he left. He had the meeting with Xi and he took off. He's gone. What does that show you? Xi came, he met with Trump, but he stayed for the APEC summit. Trump just came to meet Xi. That's it. And then he took off. He also didn't meet with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. He said he was going to meet with Kim Jong-un. That didn't happen either. So the media in the United States, in the West, I was looking over how they reported on the meeting between Xi and Trump. And the basic consensus from the media, the Western media, is that that China got the better of the deal, of the negotiations. They're even admitting that Xi bested Trump. Of course, the media, you could argue that the media is very unfriendly to Trump anyway, but that's how they saw the results of the 1.5-hour summit between the two leaders. Arnaud Bertrand put a very good post up on X. And he actually explained 2 points that I missed in my coverage of the results of the negotiations between Trump and Xi. Actually, a lot of analysts missed these points or didn't go into detail about the 2 points that were agreed on during the negotiations. The one thing that was agreed on, which is big for China, is that the Trump administration, they're walking back their 50% rule. This was the rule that actually got Nexperia that got Nexperia seized by the Netherlands, that whole thing with the Nexperia chips. The 50% rule said that if your company was or a subsidiary had a 50% plus ownership from China, that it ended up on the U.S.'s entity list. And that basically meant that the company was on a type of a trade sanctions, right? And so you didn't want to end up on that entity list, and Nexperia ended up on that entity list. And so the Netherlands seized Nexperia, and then you had the export block of those chips. Anyway, that whole thing has now been walked back. So that's a big win for China. And the other point that that Arnaud Bertrand mentioned in his post, which is a very interesting fact that I did not know, was that China actually negotiated the tariff from the United States, not down to 47%. In actuality, the tariff is 16%, which is just one percentage point higher than the tariff placed on the European Union, approximately 16%. And so what I didn't know was that that before Trump entered office, there was already, on average, weighted, there was a 20.7% tariff on China. Okay, so this was before Trump entered office. And once again, this is a weighted average. 20.7% tariff was already in place on China. So Trump comes into office, and he then places the 20% fentanyl tariff, right? So that takes it to about 40.7%, if I'm doing my Annalena Baerbock 360 math. 20.7 plus 20 multiplied by 360 degrees divided by 360, yeah, it takes you to about 40.7. And then Trump placed the Liberation Day tariff. So China effectively had a 40.7 weighted tariff against it before the Liberation Day tariffs. And then Trump placed the Liberation Day tariffs, which took the tariffs against China to 75%, then to 125%, then to 150%. Then it got negotiated down after Madrid, after those talks, to around 57%. And so Trump presented the picture that that China had their tariffs reduced from 57 to 47, but actually what China negotiated was a real tariff, at least when it comes to Trump, of 16%. They already had the 20.7% before Trump. They negotiated down the fentanyl tariff from 20% to 10%. And then they negotiated a 16% tariff after that. So yes, it's a 47% tariff, but in actuality, the Liberation Day tariff is only 16%. So they actually negotiated the Liberation Day tariff from 150% all the way down to 16%. And then they have the 10% fentanyl tariff, which they negotiated that down as well. And then they have in place the 20.7% tariff, which preceded Trump. So that's an interesting fact that that Arnaud pointed out in his excellent post. By the way, the G7, they are going to launch an initiative for mineral refining and processing as the G7 in order to counter China's dominance of rare earths and minerals. So that's an initiative that the G7 are now working on. And I think we can do a clown world. What do you guys think? Let's do a clown world. Let's begin with one of the king clowns, Macron, whose approval rating, according to the latest polls, is 11% now. He is at an 11% approval rating. Little Napoleon. I believe this poll is let me see if I have this bookmarked, who conducted this Macron poll. Let's see. His approval is at 11%. Le Figaro. Le Figaro on Thursday conducted a poll and they found out that Macron has an 11% approval, which I find absolutely incredible. You're telling me that there are 11% of the people in France, of the population, that actually support Macron? Wow. Wow. That's incredible. That is incredible. Anyway, that's Macron. He doesn't care. Macron doesn't care. The only approval that Macron cares about is the Green Goblet's approval. That's it. That's the only approval that matters to Macron. All the other approvals don't matter. As long as the Green Goblin approves, then we're all good. All right, that's one clown world. Here's a good clown world. Here's a fun clown world. Which a Halloween trick or treat at the White House, and these kids, three kids, were getting candy. Well, they're getting candy from Trump and Melania. And these three kids that got candy from Trump and Melania were dressed up as Trump, Melania, and a Secret Service agent. That's funny. Very smart. Very smart costume from these three kids. Good on them. Good on them. Very, very brilliant idea to dress up as Trump and Melania and as a Secret Service guy. So that was interesting. That was fun. Some good news. Some good, lighthearted, fun, positive news to end today's Friday video. Like this channel, subscribe to this channel. Yes, I forgot. Yesterday I remembered, today I forgot. But anyway, if you like this video, then hit that like. It helps me out a whole lot. And please subscribe to this channel. Maybe I can get to 250,000 subscribers on YouTube by the end of the year. What a long journey. Anyway, X, Telegram, Rumble. That's where you can find the Duran. That's where you can find me, as well as on Substack. We have a good Substack that is just now starting. Substack alpha version for us. And pretty soon we'll be moving to the beta version, which means more exclusive articles. Of course, all the articles that we write for Substack, the exclusive articles, we will also post them on our locals community. So join us on the duran.locals.com as well, and I will see everybody tomorrow. I am going to chill out right here once I clean things up. Take care.